This was recorded August 13th in San Francisco at the the San Francisco Main Library.
I'm Janet Hoff, I'm a librarian from the Business Science and Technology Department's fourth floor, and I just wanted to go for a few housekeeping things before we get started. The first thing is, can all the people on the edges move in a little bit, because we're going to have a lot of latecomers, and I don't want them to go through you to interrupt your being extended.
No.
If everybody can just move in, that would help a lot. I wanted to mention a couple of things happening in our library that are somewhat related to today's talk. On the fifth floor in the Government Documents Department, there's an exhibit called Fear of an Atomic Age. And what they are government documents from the Cold War. That's upstairs on the fifth floor. Please give it a visit after the program today if you have time. It's on the library through December 15th. The bathrooms are open in the basement. We'll have a couple of breaks, and they're over on the side of the lobby. Also, if many of the coalition groups have literature, I set some tables out there. Feel free to use them for your literature. And the exits, just note that the exits are on both sides, but in the unlikely case of emergency, please go out where you came in. And now I'm going to introduce Jeanette Hasper from the Warren Law Library. There's a piece of cloth on top. Call the guy here. Jeanette? Thank you.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Well, I'm so glad that we are here together and we can combine our intention for peace moving forward. So everyone just take a moment to appreciate this peaceful day in San Francisco and the privilege of having our speaker here with us. I'm Jeanette Hasper, coordinator of the Warren Law League, also known as WALL, very unlike Donald Trump's abhorrent wall. It's one of the 15 organizations allied in our Coalition for Nuclear Disarmament. And we are co-sponsoring this program, 16 organizations in all, along with the San Francisco Public Library, the Business and Technology Center. We initiated the program, and the coalition is an outgrowth of our biennial meeting. So we have some WALL literature. If anyone would like to join WALL, you can. Right now, we have nominal dues of $10 a year. But we are hoping that this coalition will move forward and gain traction, especially among the young, who seem to be virtually ignorant of the threat of nuclear war. It seems that young people have been growing up with these video games featuring explosions that are totally harmless, and they don't understand that human beings are incinerated and the earth endlessly polluted when such things are used. We have now two presidents who seem to be flat happy and very either ignorant or totally reckless in their approach to foreign policy. And we need a citizen effort, not only in the United States, but worldwide, to put a rein on nuclear weapons. So WALL is a nonpartisan, all-volunteer group. We seek to uphold the Constitution and the treaties of the United States in matters of war and peace. We oppose any warfare initiated by the executive. Our website, warandlaw.org, shows that the Constitution's founders intended that the authority to start any conflict lay exclusively with Congress. Yet presidents from Truman through Obama have unconstitutionally plunged us into wars on their own, from Korea and Vietnam to Iraq, Libya, and Syria. WALL started in 1998 when Bill Clinton threatened for the third time to bomb Iraq. Iraq was one of Clinton's 8 unilateral war, acts of war, or interventions in 8 years. We have a table here with wall leaflets and sign-up sheets and also our history. We also want the United States to carry out treaty obligations in war and peace matters, and that includes refraining from aggressive war, seeking peaceful settlement of disputes with other countries, and negotiating a treaty for nuclear disarmament. Negotiating nuclear disarmament is mandated by the 1968 NPT, the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, Article 6. Yet some of the U.S. government violated international law by its aggression against Iraq. It violates it by building up its nuclear arsenal, $1 trillion, just got put into residing us to the next 30 years of having a nuclear arsenal. And we're hoping for results by the 50th anniversary of the NPT, which is 2018. So the 14 other allied groups besides WAL are alphabetically the American and French Service Committee, the Berkeley Fellowship of Unitarian Universalists, Code Pink, Dominican Sisters of Mission San Jose, East Bay Peace Action, Ecumenical Peace Institute, CALC, Mount Diablo Peace and Justice, Physicians for Social Responsibility, San Francisco Bay Area Chapter, Shomer Shalom Network for Jewish Nonviolence, Tri-Valley Communities Against Radioactive Environment, Veterans for Peace, Chapter 69, Western States Legal Foundation, the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, San Francisco and East Bay Chapters, and World Beyond War. Before introducing our speakers, I'm sorry to say, WAL will have the briefest business meeting as we elect officers. To conduct the proceedings, I call on Daniel Whistle. Daniel, are you here? He is a board member. Here we go.
So much for being here. I'm Daniel Sacramento from the Executive Board, and I'm also the webmaster, WebScribe for War Law League. The War Law League, or WAL, proposes to elect 3 officers and at least 4 executive board members, all for 2-year terms. If you consider yourself a WAL member, you may vote. There is a slate of 7 candidates, all for re-election as follows. Coordinator, Jeanette Hasberg. Secretary, Paul W. Levenger. Treasurer, Grace Tedesi. Executive Board Members, Sister Stella Marie Goodpaster, O.V., Dolores Rodriguez, Harry A. Scott, and yours truly, Daniel Zwicker. I move that the slate be accepted. Do I hear a second? Are there any other nominees? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion is passed. All 7 are re-elected. Now, again, Ms. Ashford. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Well, now, for the introduction of our esteemed. She is a medical doctor from Australia who practiced pediatrics there and taught in American medical schools. She has devoted 45 years to educating the public on nuclear perils by speaking, writing, and organizing. Her efforts began in 1971 when she started a movement against French atomic tests in the Pacific, a position subsequently adopted by both Australia and New Zealand. In the United States, she activated Physicians for Social Responsibility as its president from 1978 to 1983, and she helped to start such groups in various countries. As a consequence, the 1985 Nobel Peace Prize went to her group's umbrella organization, International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War. She met with President Reagan and Soviet Ambassador Joe Brennan, addressed Senate and United Nations groups, and was the subject of considerable media coverage. In the U.S., she founded and headed WAN, Women's Action for Nuclear Disarmament, and co-founded and led the foundation's STAR, Standing for Truth About Radiation. She currently heads the Nuclear Policy Research Institute in Washington, D.C., and the Helen Caldicott Foundation for a Nuclear-Free Planet in Asheville, North Carolina. She has over 20 honorary academic degrees and many other awards for her work. She has written or edited 10 books. 3 of them are being sold here this afternoon, and she will sign copies at the end of the program. Ladies and gentlemen, I present Dr. Helen Caldicott.
And the like, and he said, you want to become a democracy. Well, a
America isn't a democracy. You don't even vote. At home, Australia, voting is compulsory. We get fined $80 if we don't vote. And we're all registered to vote. And that's what you should be doing. It should be compulsory. You know, they've got all your addresses and everything. Why isn't it so that the very rich stand up? So you need a revolution of the people. Of people, for people, and by the people. Anyway, so off he went, but to join NATO, you had to pay $3 million or much more to arm. So therefore they had to buy weapons. And that was good for Lockheed Martin. And war is good for Lockheed Martin, and Boeing, and Northrop Grumman, and Raytheon, and all the other god-awful killing companies that you pay for with your tax dollars to the tune of $1 trillion a year. And you have no free health care, no free education. You're being screwed. I don't know why people are so sort of passive, you know? I suppose it's the television. You watch television and you go into an alpha activity in the brain and you get really almost anesthetized. And all these messages come into you very fast and you don't have time to think about them. But they register in your brain, so you walk into this, I'm tangentializing. I've gone to tangents. And you go into the supermarket, and there's a thing that's just been advertised, and when you don't believe in advertising, you pick it up, because you've been brainwashed and conditioned to buy that. Okay? You don't believe me? Well, a lot of people do that. It's been shown. Anyway, so Norman Augustine, I don't know how I got off on that track. He convinced all those little countries to join NATO. So NATO moved up. NATO is America. Moved up to the border of Russia. And that Russians didn't like that. It's like Russia declaring Canada is their ally. And they start moving their troops right up to your border. What would you do? You'd blow up the world. Because you nearly did with the Cuban Missile Crisis. They just put a few missiles there. I knew Robert McNamara towards the end of his life, and he was in the Oval Office. And he said, Helen, you don't know how close we came to within 3 minutes. Now, remember that as I talk, within 3 minutes. So then the neocons in the State Department, Victoria Nuland, who's married to Robert Kagan, who's a very bad man. Neo. I went to Cairo and he said, let's wait for 6 months and see what happens. So, but in the interim, Victoria Nuland set up a coup, and in Maidan Square there was a big demonstration and a sniper firing and killing people, and it got really rough and scary, and Yanukovych fled to Russia. And in his bed was put Poroshenko, who's a cook. And not just a cook, he's a cook in terms of money, but other things too. And he's working with the Nazis. Now, there are a lot of Nazis in the Ukraine who've risen up again. And that's the army. And they're being funded and armed by the United States. How dare the United States do that? How dare the United States interfere in any other country on earth? It's not as if you don't have enough problems of your own to fix. But, you know, the world's policemen, we don't want to be policed. You've got bases in almost every country in the world, including many in my country. And my country's got no guts to stand up to you. I'm saying you in a generic way. And so he fled, Poroshenko got in. Now, the people on the eastern side of the Ukraine were very Russian, and they wanted to maintain their benefits, and they didn't like what was happening. So they stood up to these people, and so what's happening is Poroshenko's military are moving in, and they've killed a lot of people, and I can't remember exactly the number, but it's an awful lot of people. And so there's a war going on. And so Putin was obliged to kind of support those people. He did not invade. Then there was the Crimea. Now the Crimea, they voted 96% to stay with Russia, 96%. And, you know, the Crimea has been part of Russia since Catherine the Great. And they've got a warm water port at Sevastopol there, and it's very important for Russia.
So that's an area of acute friction between Russia and America. Meanwhile, the US has the audacity to practice NATO exercises right on the border of Poland, border with Russia, and install anti-missile bases in Russia and Romania. Well, what are they for? Oh, they say they're for Iran. That was, but that is, it's not Iran, it's Russia. And they can launch nuclear missiles there that can hit Moscow in a few minutes, not the normal 30 minutes it takes to go from America to Russia. So the Russians are pretty antagonized. Then the Syria, where Russia is supporting Assad, who is democratically elected. I know he's an awful man, but you don't go and kill a lot of people in a country and destroy their history in Aleppo and these wonderful ancient cities because you don't like the guy in charge. You know, a lot of people didn't like George W.
Yeah.
But they didn't have the ability to come and, you know, kill you. But that's what's going on now. It's just hideous, hideous. And why is that happening? Because Russia has a warm water port in the Mediterranean, in Syria. And Julian Assange, you know, he's just been released by the Swedes. Today I heard that they're not going to arrest him. He's been freed. Now, I think if he gets out, America will grab him and put him in solitary confinement. But anyway, he was on a big screen at a big meeting we had in Sydney, Australia. And we were asking him questions for an hour, and I said, what did the emails show about America before they started funding these, quote, rebels, ISIS and all the others, to go into Syria? And he said it was planned for about 5 years before it actually started to happen. So invading another country with oil there, and there's a big oil pipeline. And that's now being defended by the people who are working with the United States. That's another area of severe friction. Meanwhile, Russia and America own 93% of the 16,000 hydrogen bombs in the world. What about North Korea? Ooh! They could blow up a city. Only you and only Russia and destroy life on the planet. Evolution. So who are the real terrorists in the world? Russia and America. You've got over 1,000 hydrogen bombs on hair trigger alert in those missile silos. If you fly over Dakota, north and south, and Colorado, you look down and see them. There are little roads going to Iran, like a spider's web, all around. In those missile silos are two men aged 18 to 21, yes sir, no sir, press button, sir. Each is armed with a pistol, one shoot the other if one shows signs of deviant behavior. What if the deviant one shoots the other one? The locks are 12 feet apart to launch the missile, but they've worked out a key and string trick, a key on a string, and one man can turn both locks. They are run by floppy disks. The telephones often don't work. They get really bored down there. It's not very good to be one of the officers in the Air Force because there's no way to go upwards in the Air Force. 72 of them have been discharged for cheating or taking drugs. The officer in charge of all of the missile silos, and there are about 420, each missile silo has one missile with about three hydrogen bombs. Some have been decreased, but, you know, they're Minutemen, they're called Minutemen. Nice word. Three hydrogen bombs. The man in charge of the whole thing, called a wing, I don't know why, went to Moscow, and he got drunk, and he exported with naughty women, and he wanted to sing karaoke, and he did naughty things, so he was fired. Inappropriate. He was the boss. There was another boss who was a gambling addict, and he was caught, I don't know, in Reno or something, somewhere gambling, so he was fired too. Now, these are the men in charge of the future of the planet, right? So what happens? How could it happen? Well, in 1967, I just read this today and posted it on Facebook and Twitter, there was a solar storm, and you know what happens, the sun sends out huge fires. and it affected the magnetic field in the Earth, and it triggered the satellites to indicate Russia has launched nuclear weapons. Squadrons of planes were already in the air flying B-52s to bomb Russia. Incidentally, those planes, the men always flew with a patch over one eye, because when they dropped their bombs, they would be blinded by the flash, so then they could take the patch off and have vision in one eye and fly home. Except that when it's a nuclear war, there's so much dust in the air, like a volcano, that it clogs up the engines of the jets and they crash. Anyway, even if they could get back, where do they land? Because America will be destroyed. Coast to coast, north to south. Anyway, they are there all ready to, in the air, ready to fly into Russia to bomb them. That's one time. Another time, in 95, America had a weather satellite in Norway it was going to launch. It warned the Pentagon, but the Pentagon sort of hopeless that loses stuff. You know, so often a Russian comes and films me, and they're all in their black leather jackets and stuff, and then they come half an hour later and say, sorry, Dr. Caldicott, the camera didn't work. Can we do you again? And so they're not terribly efficient, to say the least. And they spot. The satellite goes up, and it's picked up by their over-horizon radar, and there's Yeltsin, a hardened alcoholic, a bottle of vodka before breakfast. Why is he using Keflopathy? Korsakoff syndrome. I'm a real alcoholic. Because I know someone who brought him to New York to go on television, and he went to his hotel room to get him in the morning, and he's sitting on a suitcase drinking his bottle of vodka. The suitcase, the footballer. Now, if you watch the president, always walking just behind him is a man with a suitcase, and it's called the football. It's an officer. In the football, the code for the president to start a nuclear war. When Reagan was shot, they lost the football for 2 days. So they'd opened the football for the first time ever in Moscow, and there's Yeltsin, an alcoholic, with his general standing over his shoulder saying, President press that button. He had 3 minutes to decide. 3 seconds before that 3 minutes elapsed, the missile veered off course, and they realized they were not under attack. We were 3 minutes from annihilation. Cuban Missile Crisis, 3 minutes from annihilation. Someone plugged a war game to take things to the computers in the Pentagon, and they thought they were under attack. In fact, they called Brzezinski. He was Carter's foreign secretary, and Brzezinski had to go and wake up Carter and tell him they were under attack, but he realized just before he woke up Carter. No, but you know what? This happens frequently. And I sit here and look at you all, and I don't know how we're still here. It's a miracle. I told my family, I'll be home if it's not a nuclear war, and I mean it. On 9/11, the Air Force went to the highest stage of nuclear alert because no one knew what was happening. George Bush was reading My Pet Goat to upside down to a kindergarten car park in Florida. Cheney was in the war room underneath, you know, he's in charge. Cheney, the sociopath. And no one knew. So a case of high international anxiety. And so the Air Force put its missiles on the highest stage of alert from DEFCON 5. 4, 3, 2. And that's the highest before they launch. Now, that was on their website for a couple of days. I found it, but they took it off pretty fast. So any sort of international anxiety could trigger a nuclear war, and we're at a time of high international tension now. And I think, supposedly, Putin's probably paranoid. Why not? Being threatened by the United States with missiles right on his border. I know medically you don't threaten a paranoid patient or they're likely to do something very extreme and hurt you. This is stupidity. Absolute. What we should be doing, I have to say, trust it and nutter. But at least he says we should make friends with Putin. Of course we should make friends with Putin. And Terry Paul compares him to Hitler. She's a nutter. She's very close to the nuclear. Married to the establishment. She's never seen a war she didn't like. She killed Gaddafi. She
side. I'm not quite sure. How dare she say that? They shot him by accident with rifles up in his anus. And now what's happened to Libya? Destroyed. All the ancient tribes are all fighting, which is exactly what happened in Iraq. Saddam Hussein went to prison. When he was 21, he was recruited by the CIA. He was a CIA man in Iraq. Till he got under their skin a bit and started to say, you know, we might nationalize the oil field or something. So then they invaded it and killed him. In a, what did they call it? Spider's hole or something. And now look what's happened to Iraq. And that awful guy, Brenner, who was in charge, went to Iraq and he dismissed all the officers and all the officials in the government who were Sunni and put in Shias. Now you know about Sunnis and Shias, they're at each other's throats, ancient animosities. So I suppose it's like the animosities in Ireland between the Catholics and the Protestants. And so things fell into disrepair. I remember they were dropping wires, sort of nets, over the towns and villages to short all the electricity systems, so they had no electricity. They bombed the hospitals, they've used depleted uranium, which lasts for, well, its half-life is 4.5 million years, that's uranium-238. Children being born in Basra, Fallujah, Baghdad, with gross congenital anomalies, babies born with no brains and anencephaly. They've got a skull, and on the base of the skull is a noggin of midbrain, so they cry and they cough and they suck. I've delivered such a baby. And they die within a week. Babies being born with no arms, no legs, or with their abdominal viscera exposed because the two muscles didn't fuse in the center of their stomach. And there's a very high incidence of childhood cancer. I wrote an article for the New York Times about 10 years ago, and they said, we are unable to publish this. If you look at the literature of the Pentagon, they've known forever the dangers, medical dangers of uranium. It's totally well documented. We used to use it in medicine in our ignorance. So these men, Gaddafi and Hussein, tough though they were, like, who was the guy in Yugoslavia who died? Yes, Tito, when he died, the whole thing fell apart. Because you need a tough person to keep these warring tribes under control. And America, in its stupidity, goes in and kills these guys and the whole thing falls apart. Same thing's really happening in Syria. Now, where am I? So, a nuclear war could start by a hacker. These young kids, aged 16, usually always boys, with very poor frontal lobe development. My grandson, I mean, he walked through with his mates, like Graham, he'd say, and you wouldn't know what they are up to. Smart! And I talked at the University of Minnesota recently, and there was a very good computer expert, and I said, well, why hasn't it happened yet? You know, young kids hacking into the early warning system. She said, well, they just haven't worked out how to do it yet. There are over 1,000 hackers, real ones, into the Pentagon every day. So because it happened by hacker, by accident, as I've described, and there are many, by international tension, or, you know, say North Korea did set up a nuclear weapon, or say India and Pakistan started to do it, because they're very much at war, that could set up off the whole global nuclear war, like on 9/11. And what would happen? Well, let me tell you. America's official policy now is to fight and win a nuclear war. It hasn't changed. Even under Obama, who is spineless. He's got no spine. He's commander-in-chief, he has a bully pulpit. If it'd been like FDR, he would have inspired the Americans, he would have taught them and led them and said to the Pentagon, no, because he would have taken a unit with him. Like FDR did. And remember how everyone so loved him? We just went to Campobello where he developed polio. Really, your last great president. Anyway, I'm off on my train of thought here. Now, how do you win a nuclear war? Well, you send over a missile, hydrogen bomb, and take out Moscow. So you decapitate, and this is military terminology, decapitate Putin, so he can't press his button. Then, at the same time, you launch two hydrogen bombs on each missile, so they're landing within seconds of each other, so don't get fratricide, another Pentagon tomb, killing your brother, because all the debris created with the next bomb coming in will damage the bomb. So it's probably very accurate. You can do that. And then you destroy the missile, and you've won the nuclear war. Second World War thinking. Out to lunch. I mean, the male reptilian midbrain, you know, poisoned by testosterone. I mean, even a child would say, but grandma, why? Because they're more intelligent than these men and women. So, but the Russians don't want to lose the nuclear war, lose their missiles. So they've dug a great big cave in the Ural Mountains with a missile called the Dead Hand. Now, I know the guy who orchestrated this and planned it. He's dead now, a lovely man. And it goes up and it sends a message by radio to all the missiles in Russia to launch the missiles by computer control. So we're in the hands of the nutters. Well, Trump said, well, we've got nuclear weapons, why can't we use them? I mean, it's an obvious question, isn't it? What a kindergarten kid would say. Some people say he's like a kindergarten kid, in a way. And Hillary, I think... No, I shouldn't say that. I was going to say something about it. Well, I wonder if she's got an arenoblastoma on her ovary, which secretes testosterone. Anyway, now how are the... Now, you know sometimes you're listening to the NPR and you hear, woo! We're just testing the emergency broadcasting system. Well, this time, the weapons take half an hour to go from launch to land. And you know, it's the Russian weapons that are going to kill you. So you have to be friends with the Russians so they don't launch their missiles to kill you. It's just crazy. I mean, a kindergarten child would understand that. There are 12 hydrogen bombs targeted on New York, as I speak, and the Russian bombs are big. Many times, orders of magnitude bigger than Hiroshima and Nagasaki. 12 were left targeted at each airport. This is how they target. And the bridges, and the tunnels, and, you know, the major centers in Wall Street, 12. There are probably more targeted on Washington. Every half of the U.S. population of 50,000 or more is targeted with at least one hydrogen bomb. Same in Canada. And since the Cold War ended, America decided to target China too, in its beneficence. And the whole of Europe's targeted England, Canada, Australia, Japan. Now, so you've got your radio on and you hear, woo! This is not a test, we're under nuclear attack. You will get about 5 minutes notice, if that. Because what happens is the satellites in the air pick up the shine, the sunshine, on the missiles. The missiles are called buses, and their passengers are called, their passengers are hydrogen bombs. And free space is called MIRV, multiple independent re-entry vehicles. So they send up the missile, then from the bus, the passengers are released, flying separately, and their reflections are picked up by your satellites. And that radio is back to the Strategic Air Command in Omaha, Nebraska, and I went there to speak to the chief in charge years ago, and there's a big gate open which says, peace is our profession, which is like that sign over Belsen. Is it? Work is our something like
that. Auschwitz.
Yeah, it's like that. He was ardently against the Russians and communists, and he had missiles on every... Talk about missile envy, my book, which I wrote years ago. Well, they are! You know, they You watch them, it's like an erection with two big balls of fire. It is. And the language they use in the military is missile erector, not radar. Deep penetration. Power one and top line. Usually a hole with one big orgasmic one. They say that in front of women with no sense of embarrassment at all. Anyway, you know, and for half an hour arguing with this guy, and then I finally said, have you got grandchildren? And his face softened, and he said, yes. I said, how many? He said, two. How old are they? 2 and 8 months. And I got him. It's like how Carter got Saddam, and who was the, not Saddam.
Arafat.
Yeah, Arafat at the Camp David Peace Accord. Because they showed pictures of their grandchildren. You have to get to where people live. So the missile takes, and the bombs, it happens to take half an hour to go from launch to land. Meanwhile, your satellites pick the attack up and the other side launches. So the whole thing's over in about an hour. They would say run to the nearest fallout shelter, you won't know where one is, and no one's aware of this anymore anyway. The bomb will come in at 20 times the speed of sound, so you won't hear it. And land and explode with 10 or 20 times the heat inside the center of the sun. E=mc². The splitting of the atom changes everything, save man's mode of thinking. Thus we drift towards unparalleled catastrophe. Einstein. It will dig a hole 3/4 of a mile wide and 800 feet deep, and this is the epicenter. Lovely San Francisco. And all of us and the buildings and the earth below ejected into the mushroom cloud into the stratosphere. Out to about 5 miles, everyone is vaporized. In Hiroshima, a little boy was reaching up to catch a red dragonfly against the blue of the sky. And there was a blinding flash, and he disappeared. And if you go to Hiroshima, in the museum, there's his shadow on the pavement. The first time man had ever developed a method to vaporize his fellow human beings. A woman was running, holding a baby. She'd been converted into a charcoal statue. People were walking with skin just falling off their bodies. Eyes melted. They looked at the bomb. You need to know this. Winds of 500 miles an hour suck people out of buildings, turning into missiles traveling at 100 miles an hour. Pieces of glass traveling at 100 miles an hour decapitate people. There's a book about the effects of nuclear war put out by the Pentagon and the equation how far a piece of glass traveling at 100 miles an hour penetrates human flesh. That puts it all out. A firestorm of 3,000 square miles would then engulf this city, but don't forget it's not just one bomb. Many on San Francisco, and the whole area would be burnt. Everything. Even in the middle of winter up in Boston, everything burns. And then fires would coalesce across the country, everything is targeted. And the country would burn coast to coast, north to south. Fallible human beings. The person could get a cerebral tumor and do something crazy before the diagnosis is made. He could develop, or Putin, acute psychosis. I've had patients who've been quite normal, went to a business meeting, came home at the end, and he was psychotic, chasing his wife around the house. I went to try and inject him with chlorpromazine, and he was chasing, and I was chasing him around the house with a syringe, trying to stick it into his buttock, and he was putting his hand up my skirt saying, bitch, bitch. He was psychotic, acute psychosis, and it can happen to anyone at any time. We are followed. We make mistakes. We sometimes kill our patients because we make mistakes. But this is evolution. I've got a cottage garden outside my study and I look at the flowers unfolding and the butterflies coming in turquoise, this colour. And the birds. Millions of years of evolution we hold in the palm of our hand. And what happens is they explode. Everything burns. A huge cloud of black radioactive smoke is elevated into the stratosphere, circling the globe for 10 years, inducing a short ice age and a nuclear winter. Maybe the moths and the algae will survive. But nothing else is more important now than for every American, like they did in the 80s, to understand what I'm saying. The final epidemic. Are we an evolutionary aberrant? I once asked Carl Sagan, Carl, do you think there's any other life in the universe? And he thought for a long time. And he said, no. And I said, why? And he said, because if any species had reached our stage of development, they would have destroyed themselves. You know, we're pretty primitive. I think it goes back to when we were troglodytes. I'm now writing a book called Why Men Kill and Why Women Let Them. Why are we so pathetic? 52% of us. And look at Congress, all these guys in ties, and ties are the symbol of you know what. Why are there monuments to men everywhere? You know, why is there in every square in Europe a killer on a horse? Why does Napoleon have a huge mortal in Paris when he killed thousands of people? Alexander the Great. Why do we glorify war? What is patriotism about? Nationalism. It's rhubarb. Not the greatest country on earth. In fact, you're already out of the grave. American exceptionalism, you've got a killing. You've got 325,000 guns, right? Millions. Oh, hell. And anyone can go nuts and shoot anyone, and you do background checks. Like, fun, you do background. You know what happened in Australia? We had a massacre. 15 years ago, the Prime Minister said, all guns are now illegal, you've got to hand in your guns, and they chop them all up. No guns. Why don't you do that? Don't stand here now. These guys are evil. They're criminals. They should be locked up in jail. They should. They're killers. And your money, 65 cents of every dispersion you tax dollar goes to killing. Why do you put up with it? And you're like, well, what can I do? Okay, so I'll tell you what I did. One person can save the planet. I came here in 78. I was an alien. And you go through security and they say, you a communist? I didn't know what a communist was, really. Anyway, so I'd go through, and I was a woman, and I was young, and a rusty job. Well, I was at Harvard. And almost everyone I spoke to said it's better to be dead than red. And I said, well, what about the pygmies in Africa? And they said, they don't want to be communists either. And I thought, these people are actually psychotic. They were. So we organised physicians for social responsibility, 22,000 doctors, and we got on television, and I had an agent in Hollywood who worked for me for free, who put me in Vogue and Life and Time and Family Home Circle and 60 Minutes and Good Morning America. First time I ever was on television was with Merv Griffin and Star Lager Law. Oh, that's a sort of distressed piece of taffeta off the shoulders with a big frill and diamonds the size of pears hanging from her ears. And we were debating, and she said the Russians roll over children with tanks. And I said, oh my God, if you go to a break, and I had to drink water and still look straight down my shirt because I was so nervous. Now I came back and I said, you know, the children don't think they've got a future. And the audience started clapping, so I got in just under the wire. But it was very interesting, and through television, as your wonderful President Jefferson said, an informed democracy will behave in a responsible fashion. This country is totally uninformed. Totally uninformed. The kids don't know what the hell's going on. They know about global warming. And that's, you know, really where we end with a bit whimper or a bang. More likely a bang, I think. More likely. So the leader of the terminal fate of the Earth, Rupert Murdoch, who actually created my career when I stood up against the French test by publishing front page editorials at about me on the front of the Australian, the national newspaper. Then when I got into uranium, he turned against me because we all had to have two cars and chandeliers, you know, three swimming pools was important. So he's one of the most evil men in the world, if not the most evil. He broadcast to two-thirds of the world's population. We know about Roger Ailes and how he orchestrated now Fox and the like. So how do we get the American people to know? And we're all older. How many of you have got grandchildren? Children? How many of you feel that your own life is sacred? That your sperm out of millions reached your egg that night? We have a sacred responsibility. We're just so lucky to be alive, to be here. And with that evokes an enormous responsibility. We hold life on earth. In the palm of our hand. Now, you might think, really too old and what can I do? Every morning, get up in the mirror and look in your eyes and decide what you're going to do today to save the planet. And I mobilized with my fellow physicians and psychologists and architects of social responsibility. Even the morticians asked me to come and talk to their annual conference. And I said, what do you want me to talk to you for? And they said, we don't want to have to embalm radioactive bodies. And I said, you'll be one yourself, you don't have to worry. But they passed a resolution against nuclear war. So in 5 years, we educated 80% of Americans to be opposed to the nuclear war concept. We had 1 million people at Central Park, the biggest rally ever in the history of this country. I spent an hour and a quarter with Reagan in the White House alone, holding his hand, trying to teach him about the mental and other effects of nuclear war. He knew nothing. He didn't know about Team B and Team A in the CIA, blue-green laces. He really was almost totally ignorant. And so I've just written my book, Missile Envy, and I was full of facts and figures, so I stopped him and corrected. You know, when he got anxious, he'd get red cheeks. It's called the malar flash. So I'd have to hold his hand and reassure him. So I established a doctor-patient relationship with him. I thought I had no influence. And I came out saying I thought the diagnosis was impending Alzheimer's, which was accurate. And then he started to say nuclear war must never be fought and can never be won. And then Gorbachev saw doctors on the Soviet television talking about the medical effects of nuclear war. And then he allowed the Berlin Wall to come down. And the two men, Reagan and Gorbachev, met in Reykjavik. And I've just been to Reykjavik, but I went there years ago to address a big women's conference. And they met in a tiny little house. And it was all there around with people with rifles around, surrounding the house. In one room was Reagan and Gorbachev. Next room sat Gorbachev and Chevalier. Upstairs was Richard Pearl, the Prince of Darkness, sitting on a lavatory, writing numbers on bits of lavatory. The Russians came totally prepared with proposals. The Americans came with nothing. So Gorbachev would say something, and Reagan would then go and talk to Schultz, who'd run upstairs to Richard Pearl. And that's how it worked out. And downstairs, meanwhile, in the basement were the KGB drinking their vodka. And one shot a lighted match by accident into the waste paper basket. It caught fire. And the whole place nearly burnt down because of the KGB. Well, the Russians are alcoholics. You know, the soldiers used to drink the antifreeze liquid they put into their tanks. And what happened was they nearly got there to agree to abolish nuclear weapons, and Reagan got hung up on his Star Wars. He was introduced to this by that wicked man, Edward Teller. It's a hot place in the hills, Edward Teller. And Reagan imagined sort of plastic yellow dome over America, and the missiles would come in and bounce off.
and he was obstinate, and Gorbachev was obstinate. He should have said, okay, Reagan, have your Star Wars, because he knew it wouldn't work. It can't work, according to the laws of physics. But they got hung up on that. And I remember Schultz came out of the conference and had a conference, a meeting conference, and he said, we did this, and we did this, and we agreed to this, and then his face fell. And then the Cold War ended, and we were so exhausted. We lay back in our cars, they talked about peace dividends, but the Pentagon didn't get rid of their missiles. They need them for their masculinity.
Right.
Like these guys drive very loud motorbikes and very loud cars, you know, you feel that testosterone pumping. It's true. There's an experiment, there was a woman here in San Francisco who was measuring hormones. And there was an altercation in the lab, and she noticed that what happened was the men would go into their rooms, slam the door, and sit and sulk. The women the next morning came in and they cleaned the benches and made coffee, and so she thought that's interesting, so she did the hormone levels. Of course, the testosterone went sky high, but in the women, the oxytocin went up, a fascinating hormone, which I was taught in medical school is only secreted when you're lactating. And I know when I fed my baby, I thought I could feed the whole world. It's an amazing hormone. And so women are the peacemakers, 52% of us, and we do nothing. At least in Greece, in the strata, the men were fighting and killing all the time, the women said, no more sex. So they stopped killing. So I think that sex is more important to men than killing. But the two centers for sex and killing violence are in the midbrain, and they're very closely associated in men, and each secretes dopamine, that lovely feeling you get after an orgasm, you know? And so does violence. So sex and violence are intimately interlinked in the male brain. You know, why do men have erections when they go into battle? Why do they play porno films for men in aircraft carriers before they take off to kill people and drop their bombs? Why do men rape women when they conquer territory? I don't understand it, and so that's what I'm trying to explore in this book. I don't think it'll do any good, but at least it's trying to work out why. Like, why do we get polio till Jonas Salk and Sabine appeared and isolated the polio virus and we eliminated it? Now I'll go find the etiology of killing. So, we've got a lot of work to do, but I want to say to each of you, and I only came here to empower you, if I could do what I did, and I had three kids and a husband and stuff, each of you can be as powerful as the most powerful person who ever lived. And if you really realize how your life is sacred, and I know you do, because I've treated so many people who are on their deathbeds, or people whose children are dying and they fall into my arms and weep. When you're at the coal face of life, then you realize how precious it is. A man came up to me once and he said, well, two things. He said, I've got prostate cancer. He said, and I'm on estrogen. He said, the first time I've ever felt like shopping. And then another man came up and who is dying of prostate cancer. He said, I'm smelling the roses. Looking at the days, how precious this is, and what responsibility, ultimate responsibility each one of us has. And you can be as powerful as the most powerful person you ever lived if you follow your intuition. Take in what I've said. Go through the grief. Don't have a drink. Don't listen to music. Feel. Swim the river of grief. And out of that, you get the message. You'll know what you have to do. No one else can tell you what to do. You've got your own special, special abilities and potentials. And turn this country upside down. There are not people here to do that. So, looks like I've finished. But I have really. I just would like to say thank you for coming. coming. And it's only if Americans abolish nuclear weapons will Russia follow. So you hold the evolution in the palm of your hand. It's your responsibility. Totally. Do it. Thank you.
Any of the feelings you have now, and stay with them, sleep with them. I come and stand at every door, so none can hear my silent prayer. I knock and yet remain unseen, for I am dead, for I am dead. I am only 7, although I die in Hiroshima. Long ago, I'm 7 now, as I was then. When children die, they do not grow. My hair was scorched by swirling flame, my eyes grew dim, my eyes grew blind. Death came and turned my bones to dust, and ash was scattered by the wind. I need no truth, I need no right, I need no sweet or even bread. I have nothing for myself, for I am dead. For all that I have is that for peace. You fight today, you fight today, so that the children of the world can grow and run and laugh and play. I come and stand at every door, so none can hear my silent prayer. I knock and yet remain unseen, for I am dead, for I am dead.
Thank you.
lady down by the Jordan Sea, down by the riverside, down by the riverside, down by the riverside, down lay down. Down by the riverside, down by the riverside. I ain't gonna study war no more, ain't gonna study war no more, ain't gonna study war no more. I ain't gonna study war no more, ain't gonna study war no more. Ain't gonna study war no more. Gonna shut down the Livermore lab, down by the riverside, down by the riverside, down by the riverside. Gonna shut down the Livermore lab, down by the riverside, down by the riverside. I ain't gonna study war no more, ain't gonna study war no more, ain't gonna study war no more. I ain't gonna study war no more, ain't gonna study war no more, ain't gonna study war no more. Best gonna bury you, feed you, down by the riverside, down by the riverside, down by the riverside. Gonna bury you, feed you, down by the riverside, down by the riverside. I ain't gonna study war no more, ain't gonna study war no more, ain't gonna study war no more. We're 115 countries strong, down by the riverside, down by the riverside, down by the riverside, we're on. Down by the riverside, down by the riverside.
Okay, we have some mics set up. If people have questions that they would like to ask Dr. Caldicott, we'll have a little more music at the close, so don't worry that we're gonna leave y'all musicless, but
I don't think we should have any more music. I'm intervening. I want people to stay with their feelings, because when you have music, it makes you feel happy and united, and I want you to stay with what I've told you and hold on to it. Don't lose it. Please, don't lose it. So I think no more music, if that's okay with you. Thank you.
Germany is shutting down all of its nukes, and the way they did it, or doing it, is they passed a solar payment policy that requires the utilities to pay 99 cents a kilowatt hour to homeowners who feed the solar onto the grid. In your talks, do you ever mention the example of Germany creating this massive solar housing project, each house having 100 solar panels, and that way they're able to shut down the nukes? They banned fracking this year using that.
Yeah. Well, I didn't talk about nuclear power today because actually nuclear power is part and parcel of the nuclear weapons industry, and there was a psychologist in the Pentagon in the 50s, I think, it's in one of my books, who said we should get into the peaceful nuclear action to make Americans accept nuclear weapons more readily. It's an evil industry, and all of your nuclear power plants should be shut down tomorrow, but the problem is it's got huge
quantities of radioactive waste. Some isotopes last for a million years, and it's going to seep into the water supply that boosts the rest of time and cause epidemics of cancer, leukemia, genetic disease, and birth deformity in all future generations, not just humans, but animals and plants as well. To call it clean and green is obscene. So, yes, Germany's been good. They've settled with a huge amount of waste. They've buried a lot of their waste in the salt zone. I think it's called Golibin, and it's leaking and they're having to dig it up now. It's like it's with the facility in Arizona.
Just hoping you might mention that as a solution since Germany.
Well, it is. You've got enough wind west of the Mississippi to supply the whole country with electricity. If you upgrade your grid, you should have solar panels on every building in California.
Yeah.
How dare you not? On every parking garage, so you park your car, you test it, you plug the car in, and you drive with solar electricity. You should be conserving 28% of the electricity you waste by leaving everything on.
Yes.
You should unplug everything at night.
San Francisco just passed this law requiring all new homes to have.
Well, why not old homes? Where's Jerry Brown? You should be retrofitting them right now. You could supply millions of jobs like FDR with the New Deal. You could upgrade the economy if that's important to you, and help to save the planet. You're absolutely right. So get on to it. There's a lot of money to be made for our car. Yeah.
I've only been using solar for 26 years. But what I wanted to bring up is the most important almost nuclear disarmament that we got on September 20, 1963, the year before I was born. John Kennedy went to the United Nations and called off the nuclear arms race, called off the Cold War, called off the space race, and said we should go to the moon as a joint effort with Russia. And one of the people who removed him from office 2 months later was General Curtis LeMay, who bombed Hiroshima. And part of the reason that we haven't dealt with this is the collective PTSD we have as a society, knowing that we don't have three branches of government, we have two. We have the overt government we were taught about in school, we have the covert intelligence operatives who are the real government. Obama came from the CIA. The Clintons worked with the CIA under George Bush the First. And these are, you will not hear this on NPR. You won't even hear it on Democracy.
Okay, well, we all understand that. We all know.
But how about it's for this?
Yeah, we'll take it on and fix it. Don't you? You understand? Well, there must be a way. I thought, what you know, Susie and I went for a march on, what's the avenue? Venice. With Patch Adams, about 50 people stark naked. I was talking in the Hope Lecture Theatre where the United Nations Treaty was signed. Next door was Gorbachev talking. And Patch Adams, and it was Y2K, and there was a real fear that we could have a nuclear war by accident or meltdowns because of the computer rollovers. And the White House, they spent billions of dollars trying to fix it. And Patch went to the microphone, and the media were simply uninterested. And so Patch Adams said, I've been telling Helen since August we should take our clothes off and have a naked march. And I thought, oh, God, Patch. And I went to the microphone, and I said, who'll go on a naked march? Almost every hand went up. We came into this red velvet foyer. He got his gear off. I left my scarf on, which covered the naughty bits, and my pearls. Everyone else looked stark naked, and we led them out on this Venice. It was quite cold, but we didn't feel it. Someone started chanting, nudes, not nukes. And I realized the human body is beautiful, be it fat, skinny, tall, whatever, beautiful. And how vulnerable the human body is to radiation. And that's how we treat our patients, you know, we get to undress, it's a sacred profession. And guys were driving by and they go, pull up and start clapping, they didn't even know why we were doing it. We got to the corner, it was cold, so I didn't want to go to an American police station, you know, stark naked. So we came back and no one wants to put their clothes on, and you've never seen such a group of joyous people who'd done the right thing. And it was beautiful. And then of course we were in the New York Times the next day because the media likes see the naughty bits. They do. So why don't you organise so that in the warm weather you circle a pentagon and take your clothes off and say you know what? You get in every single publication and television in the world. In the world. And you would embarrass those generals inside and all those others. You know, news, not news. I mean, that's just a thought to get the media involved. They won't have another one. And you know, I'll take my clothes off. I'll come with you. Yes?
Not so much a question, but maybe you can update me. I'm from Albuquerque.
Speak loudly.
Okay, I'm from Albuquerque, and I remember growing up during the Cold War, the Manzano Mountain is hollowed out as a nuclear facility. And if, or rather, when they do drop the bomb, it would blow up all of New Mexico, Arizona, part of Colorado, Utah, and western Texas. It so terrified me growing under that kind of a threat, because I thought I was safe. is there some sort of an update, or is it even worse than I'm thinking?
No, it's the same. But also know that all nuclear reactors are stationary nuclear weapons. Inside each is the equivalent of 1,000 Hiroshima bombs. And there are 15 large reactors in Ukraine, including Chernobyl. 40% of the landmass in Europe is radioactive and will be for hundreds of years, if not thousands. I don't buy European food. You don't know what's radioactive. Never buy Turkish dried apricots or figs. Turkey got a hell of a fallout and sent all its radioactive tea to Russia because I was so annoyed with them. external electricity supply. You can't have nuclear reactors in a country that's at war. If Europe was covered with nuclear reactors as it is now in the Second World War, Europe would be uninhabitable for the rest of time. So just know that you've got sitting time bombs all around in your country. And it's the same, if not worse. Yeah. Let's go quickly. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Just a quickly observation about the Vietnam era, the China that President Nixon wanted to dropped the bomb
yep.
on Hanoi, he decided for the massive Christmas bombing. We had all our Navy out there with our nuclear submarines, so the ultimate of the Vietnam War was to regain China,
yep.
not just Vietnam. My question is, the bomb is like the gun. They're both tools for self-destruction. The question is, what is the tool used for? What industry? The industry is a war. How do we define war? War, I've come simplified it to that war is the death, destruction, elimination, and ultimate annihilation of the enemy.
War is butchery.
And war is butchery.
Butchery. I've just been at the Veterans for Peace conference, and these kids are sent off as cannon fodder, you know, 18 or 19, hardly with any whiskers on their face, brought up with our Pledge of Allegiance to the flag and all this rhubarb. And they go and they say, see people rooting around in bodies of dead babies.
Yeah.
And it just blows their mind. It's butchery. Thou shalt not kill. And this whole society is based on killing. And every congressperson is a corporate prostitute paid for by the military-industrial complex. They've got, you know, for an F-35 or whatever these damn killing machines they made, the seats are made in Florida, the straps are made in Massachusetts, the wheels are made, and so they're put in every congressional district and they say jobs. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You don't have jobs to kill people.
Yeah.
I'm sure Hitler said, well, we have to have jobs to make gas ovens.
Just one last observation. Okay, on killing, as you labeled Cheney as a sociopath, the actual killer, you become a psychopath.
Yes.
Because you eliminate any feeling, any human human feeling you have for anyone else. And that is the difficulty of bringing these young soldiers back to life.
I know. Thank you. Let's be quick.
Helen, yeah, I'm so delighted to be here. Here, you changed my life 33 years ago. A doctor across the bed from me, an unconscious patient, said, Sharon, come with us. You've got to help us start PSR in the San Francisco area. I did, and of course in the Stanford area, and then in San Jose. And this has totally changed my life. I've spent the last 33 years working at the face of where U.S. and Russia has its problems. And I'm still there. And I have created a plan with the help of Jack Matlock, Ambassador Jack Matlock, and yes, the American Committee for East-West Accord, and a number of other people, that will create a nationwide public awareness campaign in this country. And we must have it, and you must be on the front of it. And my question for you is, will you, some way or another, show us how we can have another first the last epidemic film? Because my friend and I, who's here with me, we paid $75 to get that film so we could circulate it all over this entire area. And
play it in every church.
Yes, but we need a second one. We need one today.
Why? So the same. Nothing's changed.
It's like we need an update.
What?
We need an update of it.
Well, now let me say, there was a film of me giving a lecture in New York with B-52s flying overhead. It's half an hour long, called If You Love This Planet, made by the Canadian Film Board. And it won an Oscar. Get that from the Canadian Film Board. The only thing that's different is the haircuts.
Well, I
think it works just as well, and people are absolutely numbed at the end of it.
Anyway,
get that, and we'll have
to give you my book about the last 33 years of my life. So
yeah.
I know what time.
Thank you.
There's like two out here.
Mr. Baca.
I wonder if you could comment, take your pick on the inside job, 9/11, the obvious one, but let's say the sending of the nukes to Cairo, Operation Pluto, the BBC documentary, Get in the Water, to cover that one. And then I remember a little over a dozen years ago mentioning to you that I had been arrested on Hiroshima Day where the nukes come from, 5300 Port Chicago Highway. That video is a great from track to YouTube, and I beat them in federal court, but that also, the 44 explosion, the first detonation of uranium, unless you believe they tested an untested bomb in Hiroshima. So if we call them on their inside jobs, you short-circuit these wars, especially 9/11, and that's so obvious with the third skyscraper
exploding. So what do you have to do?
Well, talk about any of those three that you care to, and, you know, expose our American
life. Yeah, but I live in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not American. You are. This is your country.
I'm not a shrink. They're in denial, and rationalization is
well,
the flip
don't
side.
Argue with me. I've given you your marching orders. I'm 78. I'm going to be dead soon. I can't talk to you.
And you dropped the 9/11. You dropped the 9/11 story.
No. Okay, next. So what are you going to do about it?
Well, I was thinking maybe people could go to their local state department branches and protest any form of social policy, go in a group, record the discussion, and then publicize it throughout.
So will you organize that?
If you were interested.
No, will you organize it? They will be interested if you're the leader. They'll follow you. If you speak your truth, you become a leader. And don't be afraid of what anyone thinks of you. Just speak the truth. You, no, wait a minute, don't go. Any of you?
I have a lot on my
plate. No, it's not.
Wonderful.
And that worked.
Yes,
so
much. So,
what I've been reading is The Next American Revolution by Grace and Bob, where she talked about how the racism, the materialism, and militarism can only be defeated, the world will be sacrificed. Those of us who have taken advantage of the system all these years who have the advantages, and I'm Jewish, so I'm a funny one, so I've got two consciences, one is an oppressed person and one is a member thank you. So I work with an organization called Community Living Campaign. What we work with is seniors. And what we're attempting to do is empower seniors so that we can be more engaged and more active. And I want to urge everybody here to do what Grace Lee Boggs tells us to do and what you're telling us to do, which is to be introspective. So look at ourselves. What kind of legacy do I want to leave? What is the message I'm giving to my friends, family, neighbors, church members, synagogue, mosque, whatever? What am I doing every day to make a more peaceful world? And I challenge us each to do that. And thank you so much for all your work.
Could you speak to what's going on at UC Berkeley? I heard they have like a small reactor there and they're part of this, you know, they're connected to Livermore. Do you know?
Yeah, I think they do, don't they? Yeah. Who knows? Yeah, they've got a small reactor. MIT's got a small reactor.
Yep.
Should be closed down. They're the nuclear nuts.
I'm teaching in a San Francisco public school.
Yes.
The students are mostly refugees from Central America and migrants, and we aim to try to imbue social consciousness for different things that we teach.
Speak right into the mic loudly. In a San Francisco public school, students who are Central American refugee families, and we do infuse social and political curriculum and do exchange programs with other kids who are refugees in other parts of the world. Do you have any suggestions for us as educators about other ideas we can use with youth to get them involved in what's going on in the world? Thank you.
Educate them.
Yeah.
Get my film if you love this planet and show it to them. If you love this planet, go to the Canadian Film Board, you can download it. Yeah, and show it to them. You've got it. What you have to do is shock them into reality. Look at what I did with you today, and a lot of people have left, unfortunately, but it's like I'm your doctor, and I've told you you've got pancreatic cancer. Your CT scan shows it, and that you might have 6 months to live. That's what I've done. So you've got to understand the gravity, the profound gravity of the situation. And so, I mean, I'm driven. I've been driven all my life. When I first read On the Beach, when I lived in Melbourne and the whole city was annihilated in a nuclear war, and the whole world was, I lost my virginity. I lost my innocence. And I went to medical school, first year medical school. I learned about genetics, radiation, mutation. And Russia and America were testing bombs like there was no tomorrow in the atmosphere. They knew what they were doing. 114,000 people in America got thyroid cancer, but God knows how many other cancers were caused by that. They're killers, they're murderers, they should be in jail. We don't lock up the criminals. We lock up people who smoke a little bit of dope, which is a damn good drug. Better than alcohol and smoking. All drugs should be made legitimate.
Yes.
And we should be treating the people who are drug addicts because they're sick. And we shouldn't have any homeless people in the streets who are psychotics, who are addicts, who are... You know, they need to be in homes, cared for, and loved, and raised, and looked after. After Reagan emptied all the mental hospitals, that's what happened. So, sorry.
Like many people in this world, I grew up learning to duck and cover for the nuclear bomb, you know. For the past 30 years, I've been working with children with art because I think that learning to counteract the effects of the machine are really, really important. Learning that two different colors make a third color or a multitude of colors.
kind of like the woman before me, what can we do for children? Children tend to be terrified by everything they hear, and of course all of their hyperactivity is in some sense a reaction to this. What kinds of things have you seen that children
I'll tell you, doing? During the 80s, children would say, there won't be a nuclear war because my mommy and daddy go to meetings every night to stop it. If the children see us taking responsibility for them, we can't do anything more for them. That's what we must do. It's our fault. We've brought this on the planet in our lifetime. And it's our responsibility, not these dear little innocent things, to fix it for them. So, apart from your lot of kids singing and colours and art, get up at night and do what you have to do. Think about it. Okay? Yeah.
Hi. Yeah. Yeah. Hi, Ellen. Thank you so much for setting an example for the rest of us. I'm Kay. I'd like to also include the San Francisco Great Panthers to the list. What I'm seeing this year is most of the major books talking about all this really horrible stuff we're doing. It's why are we letting them do it?
Yes.
It's one I ask myself when I look what can I do? And there's the obedience, the silence.
It reminds me of something that somebody told me, Kathy, as we were driving in. America's a cult. If you've ever been in a cult, and I've been in two cults, everyone follows orders, everyone is obedient, like the Jim Jones cult, where over 900 people committed suicide by drinking the cyanide-laced Kool-Aid van. That's what America's doing, it's a cult. Pledge allegiance, you know, every ball game, planes flying over there, flags. I remember after 9/11, I just flown into Eau Claire, Wisconsin to speak at the university. And I got up in the morning, and then the planes flew in, and I thought, my God. I walked across the campus for a swim, and a woman approached me, and she said, do you believe in Jesus? And I said, I'm an atheist. And she literally, psychologically, slammed me in the face and she said, you go to hell. And I thought, what sort of campus is this? Then I got out the Bible, because I thought that might be appropriate. All these kids marched in, hundreds of them, ashen-faced. And I read to them, shucks, it's from Luke. Love thy neighbor, do good to those who hate you. Love thine enemy, do good to those who hate you. And then I got a Greyhound bus across America 3 days later because there were no planes flying except those to take the Bin Laden family back to Saudi Arabia. And the whole country was waved in flags and I thought, please, no vengeance. But you could feel this nationalism and the need for vengeance. And I'm afraid that's where people are, aren't they? Unless they're inspired by someone truly great, like FDR, or Jesus, who was a great psychiatrist. I mean, he wasn't. If you pardon me, he was a Jew, and his mother wasn't a virgin. I mean, let's be frank. You might be offended by that, but that's the truth. But he was a great psychiatrist, and what he said is live down the ages, and what he preached, if we all lived like that, be pretty damn good, but we need a leader who inspires us with, I don't know, love is not the right word, is it? No, no. Like Joan of Arc, except she fought and fought, but an absolute determination to save the planet. And that's what I've always had. No door remains unlocked. If it's locked, I go to the side door, the back door, or I get in to see whoever I have to see. It's always a way. There's always a way. There's always a way. But wait and see what your psyche tells you to do. Stay with the pain. Yeah.
I want to thank you for giving me the answer when the
discussion always turns to despair. You know, you start going down global warming, you start going down to the theater, you end up, you just, oh my God, how do we get out of this hole? And I always like to quote you, because about 35 or 20 times, you told one time, you talked about population control, and your solution was so brilliant. It is absolutely perfect. And I hope you know what I'm referring to, and I would love to hear you say it.
Oh, you put,
it was so, it's always the answer.
You put birth control pills in the water, and what, stimulant, and what else?
It was your aphrodisiac. It was ecstasy and hardened for it.
That's right.
And when it gets down to there where there's no place left to go, I say, well, this is what Helen Caldicott said. And from there, we can lift it back up.
There is one very important thing that's happening, you know, and it's Trump. And he's starting to say, you know, well, why can't the union be with me? For the first time for about 20 years, the New York Times is starting to write Sanger and Broad about the button and the football and how Newley Walker starts. For the first time, because people are getting scared, because Hillary said, what if he gets his finger on the button? Well, what if she gets the finger on the button? And incidentally, I'll have to tell you, there are three alternatives the president has. Counterforce is to strike their missile silos. Countervalue is to just hit all the cities. And the third one is to hit both cities and missile silos. Three options, all of which would end life on the planet. Yes, last but not least.
Thank you for coming and speaking to us. I have a really basic question that I just don't have an answer to.
Okay, just one minute.
Why do people make up the word nuclear rather than saying the word nuclear?
Because George Bush said it.
That's,
he had a speech defect and he said nuclear. And everyone says nuclear.
How many people in this audience say nuclear? Raise your hand. Nuclear.
Okay, that's okay.
It's not a word.
That's a good point to end on. And look, I'm trying to...
It could also be the name of your next book.
Okay, so I think I'm signing some books afterwards, right? And I thank you for being such a lovely audience. And I pass the blame to you.
Pick up a flyer for the war and lobby. We are forming a coalition for nuclear disarmament. We're taking this forward. This is our first meeting. You can have your book signed after this meeting. But we're hoping to take this forward with many, many more gatherings of this kind. Some keep your questions in mind, whether they were answered today or not.
Thank you.